Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Heard around the world on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. It's Cannabis Talk 101, the world's number one source for everything cannabis, with Blue and Joe Grande.
Welcome to Cannabis Talk 101 with Blue and Joe Grande, and thank you guys for listening to our podcast all around the world. Check out our website, CannabisTalk101.com, as we are the world's number one source for everything cannabis, and we have so many great, amazing articles and blogs on the sites. So cool to check out, and make sure you give us a call anytime, 1-800-420-1980 is the number. Go check out our Instagram page at Cannabis Talk 101, where my brother Blue is at the number one, Christopher writes, and I am at Joe Grande 52. Now, I got to remind everybody about Advanced Nutrients. They got a complete growing system out there, you guys, for cannabis that optimizes all the phases and cycles to bring your crops to their true genetic potential. Discover more at advancednutrients.com. Now on the show, of course, Brian Buckley, you're joining us again. I love when you come by and hang out from HVGC. Your brand's doing amazing. You're always doing amazing work because you're supporting veterans, and people who buy your brand are supporting veterans.
Yep.
As you always give back and help so many. But I know you're doing the Lord's work because you talk so much about Air Force guys. And to think that the things you have to say about the Air Force being a Marine, I can't believe you're bringing on a U.S. Air Force veteran. Well, so who do we have? Just kidding.
No, that's a hell of a way to do it, but I am extremely gung-ho about this.
I know you're gung-ho, right? Exactly.
So, it was kind of funny. Pitt was like, what's this guy like? I'm like, dude, he's going to blow your mind away with his cannabis knowledge. And he's like, is he like the Yoda of cannabis? And I'm like, that might be a reasonable thing to think about, right, Michael?
The Yoda of cannabis, that type of veteran intro. Wow.
Yeah.
Old wise one. Is he green as well?
Heavy, man. I don't know. Yoda's got some big shoes to step into.
Well, before we get into it, let me tell you about Michael and all the amazing work he's done. Obviously, he served in the United States Air Force. He's the executive director of the nonprofit for Veterans Medical Cannabis Access. He's a researcher on the history of medical cannabis and international advocate for cannabis policy reform. As mentioned, served in the Air Force from 1981 to 1986, and apart from his military career, he has been involved in the United States researching traditions and history of cannabis in the country, as well as working to secure access, availability of medical cannabis for veterans, in particular, the United States Department of Veterans Affairs, and has extended its involvement at the international level since the United Nations Green General Assembly special session on the world drug situation in 1998 throughout the 2020s. Internationally, he has been involved in the New York NGO Committee on Drugs as executive committee member and is policy advisor of the International Organization Think Tank for his involvement around the World Health Organization and the Single Convention on Narcotic Drugs. International scheduling being instrumental in the efforts of, and I'll get ready for this one, leading to the withdrawal of cannabis and cannabis resin from Schedule 4 of the 1961 convention back in December of 2020. He's also working on other intellectual property tools for traditional cannabis, both in the United States and as well as internationally. So this guy literally was one of the guys who wrote the paper that removed cannabis from the United Nations.
You might as well say he knows Santa Claus, because all those other things that you just put on there, Michael, I mean, geez. Ho, ho, ho. Welcome to the show. That was an amazing intro, brother. Thank you for everything you've done, of course.
Well, great. So, yeah, Michael, I mean, let's like to start about some of the work that, you know, you have done once you got out of the Air Force, you know, how you just found cannabis, and then, you know, some of these massive efforts that you're leading, not just nationally, but on an international level.
Wow. Yeah, so I actually kind of left behind cannabis as part of the 1970s, you know, as part of my past, went off to the U.S. Air Force, and my new life and the future, you know. And I got reports back from the kids in my hometown talking about the 1980s and weed. Evidently, it went pretty bleak after I left to go to the Air Force as far as the cannabis consumers went in New York City area. The good cannabis left when I left high school, go figure.
Michael.
I went in the Air Force thinking that I really left all that stuff behind me, but just a split second decision, you know, something that happens 100 times a day. You make these decisions. Should I go left or right? Should I be in this lane or that? I made the wrong one on a motorcycle over in Guam, USA, half a day where America's day begins, in the South Pacific, Guam, USA, and just obliterated myself on a motorcycle. I was riding my buddy's brand new bike. I was heading up the mountain, heading home from a nice dinner, and we were just enjoying a day, nothing special at all, but a little bit of light rain, and it got a little dark, and I was on his brand new bike, so I took it easy, and I was in the right lane, and that was my undoing. I always found that ironic, that taking it easy and being in the right lane was my undoing, because if I had been in the fast lane, getting it going a little faster, I'd probably have been fine. But I was in a lane that just terminated, no signs, no nothing, some pretty bad Guam road, you know, infrastructure. And there's the different life path, just like that. Years and years of surgeries and medevac to Hawaii and, you know, just a whole different life experience than what would have happened had I not been in that lane at that second, at that, on that road. And, you know, I don't look back. I don't regret. I mean, there's nothing to regret. It's within. I just sort of live with it. And when I got out of the service, I actually went into retraining. I was going to get a degree in architecture, electrical engineering, opened up into this new thing, computers. You might have heard of them. We had this ability to work on the engineering of the new generations of computers, computer architecture, computer engineering.
IBM stuff, right? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's pretty cool stuff. Yeah, like a bunch of flashing lights and everything, wires. So anyway, I actually started out and I was going to go with a law, like a minor in law, and have a cyber law kind of thing. And that was actually a really great idea. I think still it was a really great idea. Think like the lawyers that stepped in with Napster or whatever. They were cyber attorneys. That was a really great field. I was kind of looking at it from a very early time. Mm-hmm. But when I got into studying cannabis in college and with the beginning of the internet, I learned a lot of stuff. I mean, there is a lot of stuff to learn. If you guys have dug into it, you know, sure, how much it's just amazing information. But if you look at that from a computer scientist perspective, from a computer engineer's perspective, there's a lot there. The cannabis actually modulates the signals within your body. And nobody's probably said it that way before, but it's the endogenous cannabinoid receptor system. Yep. It serves as a modulating level, a modulating function in your body. I thought, hey, if I can do some minor in brain chemistry, maybe I can kind of model the activity within the neurotransmitters of the body within this modulating function of this new emerging science of this endogenous cannabinoid receptor system and come up with a model for a new computer program, a new computer algorithm that would be able to take advantage of that new kind of human computer interface. Basically, you're talking about the next generation of AI being based on weed. How cool would that be?
That's pretty intense right there. I mean, I never thought of it that way.
You know, there's so many things that you get to hear about and things and about the research and come up with that way. How far are we away from this really happening, though?
This is as far away from happening as me feeling comfortable going back to school or somebody else coming up with the idea. It's funny that I dropped out of school, not because I had bad grades. I actually had a 4.0 average when I left school. All the leadership in the cannabis movement at the time at Virginia Tech had extremely high averages. But I left because I wasn't able to use cannabis and coordinate it with my school, especially at that time where it was illegal enough that I would try to like sort of stock up in the morning and smoke like a bunch on the way to school, hopefully get through the morning, and then smoke more in the middle of the day. At some point I could get out of class, out of the campus, and then try to make it to the end of the day. And that just doesn't work out. It's like a recipe for disaster. This is really, really hard coursework that I'm trying to get through just to get this degree finished, let alone get into this field of endeavor. So I'm not even sure that Virginia Tech, even to this day, is really ready to fully coordinate cannabis into their academic studies. So if I were, I'd try to go back. I guess the VA, I imagine, would put me back. I have certainly a sound reason. But at this point, I've gotten really into this cannabis activism stuff. It was my sideline in college. It was just something that went along with everything else. I sort of took advantage of the academic resources of the university and tried to learn about stuff, put myself almost on the job training for activism, and learned a whole lot of stuff, created a lot of stuff back then. But ever since then, I've been applying at least the activism stuff, keeping my brain active and keeping myself out of my wife's hair.
Yeah, nice.
That seems like that's most of the problems for everybody, Michael. You know, it's Cannabis Talk 101. Let's take a break real quick. We'll come back more with Michael Krawitz. How do you say the last name? Krawitz?
Krawitz.
Krawitz. Michael Krawitz. It's Joe Grande. It's Christopher Wright, a.k.a. Blue, my brother from another mother. He's not with us right now, but he's around here working away. And, of course, Brian Buckley from HVGC.
Yes,
we'll be right back after this.
We'll be right back with Cannabis Talk 101.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Get in zone, AutoZone.
Welcome to AutoZone. What are you working on today? Ah, thinking about gas mileage. You know, changing your oil with a full synthetic oil like Castrol Edge can help your engine get more miles. Right now, you can get 5 quarts with an STP Extended Life Oil Filter for only $36.99. Get started on your next job today with the parts you need when you need them at AutoZone or AutoZone.com.
Get in zone, AutoZone.
Restrictions apply.
Welcome back to Cannabis Talk 101.
Turn that typical night or day into something special. I think I need to do this with you, Brian, one day. When it comes to infused products, the flavor you taste should be just as enjoyable as the feeling you experience. Visit the website, loranoils.com. That's LORANNOILS.com. Loran Oils. Now, Brian Buckley, we're sitting here with your guy, U.S. Air Force veteran, Michael Allen Krawitz, Executive Director of the nonprofit Veterans for Medical Cannabis Access. Hearing how you got into this in the medical aspect and hearing so many things that you do, and of course, Michael, hearing how your wife has to deal with you, which is the same common thread of all of us men around here, as I smile as you say that from the last segment, because it's just so true about all of our lives, no matter what. Like, they all have to deal with us. And as I see you take a toke out there, Is there a regimen that you have, as you pointed out, the school one, which was morning on your way to school, try to get away for lunch, and then, you know, a dinner one? It feels like, and I'm hearing, reading between the lines, like that wasn't good enough for your regimen. You said that would drive you crazy, as you said that you did that. So what is your regimen now? Is it an edible? Is it a joint here and there? How do you take care of yourself using this medicine?
I can't tolerate edibles too well. Part of my injuries were to my stomach. I lost a little bit of my in small intestine. They had to put me back together a little bit. So I guess it's one of the consequences of that is I've never really been able to tolerate the pills. I actually did a trial of Marinol, which was interesting, a factory trial. I called them up on the phone, the company that owned Marinol at the time, which of course is the synthetic FDA approved mm-hmm. copy of THC, or it could be actual THC. Once you put it in a Marinol capsule, it doesn't matter to the DEA whether it's natural or not, as long as you didn't grow it in the USA. So they picked up the phone and I said, hey, I am a cannabis patient, use medical cannabis. It works quite well for me. I have reason to believe your Marinol would work well for me, but I can't justify spending a bunch of money just to try it to see if it works. You have a patient assistance program, but I'm certainly not eligible for that. If you let me try it, you can send me some and we do it. And she got together with my doctor, gave me a 6-month supply for free.
No way. That is awesome.
Nice work.
Yeah, I don't know how many thousands of dollars that was, but I got to be a factory trial. You know, I get to actually say I'm a factory trial of Marinol, and I couldn't take it. And nothing asparaging to Marinol. I'm sure it's fine for people that can handle the pills. I just couldn't handle it. And ironically, I think it's probably the perfect recreational drug because it is just Delta-9 THC in a pill. You don't smoke it or anything like that. It really has a pretty small downside, probably, if you take it recreationally. I'm not so sure about it long-term, the pills and all that, but it, recreationally, occasionally, I think it would probably be perfect, ironically. But for me, it wasn't good. I couldn't tolerate it. But what I usually do, I use cannabis based on the need at the moment. And there can be times when I have very little activity. I'm in, the weather's not fluctuating a lot. I haven't, pushed myself a lot. I'm in a good headspace and everything. And I might not need that much cannabis, get down to a very small amount. There were times when I was on a regular routine, activist-wise, I would go to Netherlands once a year, and for about a month, I'd sit there in a tent and smoke weed. And I actually could get to the point where I didn't need any pills during that time. But at home, I use a little bit of pain medication, a little bit of weed, on a good day, less than a gram, certainly, of cannabis. But I use it throughout the day, whenever as needed. And it's certainly not a lot at any given time, and certainly no big gaps, throughout the whole day. I'm keeping it at a certain level throughout the entire day.
It's funny as you say that, Michael, because with my injury, I was not a cannabis ingester. I'd use it on the body and oils under my tongue, but now I'm using the pins like the HGGs and other dimes and other companies that I'm using. And I do that exactly like you said, Michael. Earlier, I took a couple of just a little. It's like if I was going to take a couple of Advils.
Yep.
You know what I mean? I don't want to sit there and just and just breathe it for 20 times.
You're not getting couch locked, but you just want to use it to kind of take the edge off.
No couch. I just need a little more looser feel because it's pulling me back too tight to your way you express that, Michael. Sounded like the way I like to use it for my medical conditions, as well as my point to your way you use your words. I was like, dude, I'm right there with you.
Yeah.
I'm right there with you. That's exactly how I'm using it now, too. And just to give you a little insight about me, Michael's, I've been sober 23 years, so I've never ingested like that with a pin. So I've, only used, under the tongue and rubs. It was against, so to speak, my walk. You know what I mean? I was NAAA, the whole program type of guy. And me having this ankle surgery, me preaching to everybody, hearing this anecdotal evidence of being pills, because I've been on pills, going, well, I don't want to take these pills, so I guess I'm going to take this now.
Exactly.
And it's working. Just like Michael says, he uses it for his reasons throughout the day. I'm using it for mine, for pain throughout the day, and it works. Emotional, physical, mental, take a little bit throughout the day. It's not about, like he said, when he was younger in college, he fucking had to smoke a lot in the morning, a lot in the middle of the afternoon. And the funnier thing is, Michael, when you said that in my head, I'm going, I bet his regimen is exactly what he expressed.
Yeah.
I had a feeling it was going to be what I heard from your mouth. That's why I was like, dude, I too used to party like that and hang out and think I needed the medicine that way or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. And now when I'm dealing with my pain, I realize I need a little bit. And I literally do it in the morning when I walk the dog in the middle of get to the car, just a couple hits here, there, break, you know, between the shows, just to hear it like, okay, and still at night, ooh, it's in pain. So people finding that regimen is the hardest part, I think, though, Michael. Not only veterans like yourselves, but just everybody out there finding that regimen of cannabis that is really the right one for them. You know, whether it be a drink from the company can, whether it's HVGC products, whether it's whatever product it is, it doesn't matter, right? It's like, what is it that takes that quote-unquote edge off? Or the epilepsy seizure, or the this, or the that? You know, it's hard to find that.
It is, and that's why I always tell people, especially new people getting into cannabis, I'm like, just keep a journal. Write down what you took, how much, and how it made you feel, and you can kind of adjust from there, and that will give you a good sweet spot of what will work for you, because everyone's different.
And as you say that, Michael, are you doing anything like that with writing journals, or what are people expecting as you're the director of Nonprofit Veterans for Medical Cannabis Access out there in your area? Is this something that people can do, or is it recommended? Talk a little bit about what these people can do to help them figure out their regimen like you figured out yours.
Well, yeah, I think that's fantastic advice, actually. Exactly what you both said. You know, the hardest thing for us is going to be taking what is essentially a farmer's market / Chinese apothecary model and turn it into something that's accessible to this modern 21st century pharma-based model.
Right.
And that's inevitable to reach the larger patient population. But it's also for us as veterans inevitable for us to have to cross that bridge to actually get cannabis products into the hands of the veterans that are in the VA hospital system. So that's our goal. That's kind of where we're heading. And it's very difficult when you've got a bunch of, you know, we were yelled at by the DEA because all our information was anecdotal, but that's a good word for it. Really, we have a lot of anecdotal information about how cannabis works in different places for different patients with different plant material. And the closer we get to legalization, the less difference there is between plant material, the less difference there is between products, the less information is available at the point of sale. It's exactly the opposite of where we want to go in terms of maintaining that high level of quality that I described earlier as a you know, non-pharma based Chinese apothecary / small farmer based model. So anyway, to go into my work, I'm also on the board of an organization called the Origins Council. And the Origins Council is working in California, interestingly, on the very first cannabis appellations. And cannabis appellations are very important from this perspective because it gives you the ability to quantify those medicinal values, because you have to be able to show that there's something scientifically provable about the location, the geographical location of this plant that gives it an edge to the consumer likes it. There's something about this plant, the way it's grown, where it's grown, the soil it's grown, the light it's grown under, that produces a very reliable, predictable, and beneficial outcome to the consumer. And in terms of medical cannabis, those are medical attributes, many of them. And that program is well underway, and we are pretty far away, I mean, pretty far underway in producing sort of, as you were talking, I was thinking, this is kind of like the journal entry for all of us,
right?
At least the first one. Hopefully we'll have other ones elsewhere in the world that will match this and do the same thing for other parts of the world where you have extraordinary cannabis. I mean, Northern California, outdoor cannabis, some of the best in the world.
Sure.
As you describe it, when you were talking, Michael, all I was thinking was Humboldt County, the whole thing. I mean, I just started seeing the mountains, and I just started seeing everything over there going. Everything, Michael, you're describing is what they've been producing consistently, and I'm from the Bay Area, from that area, and we used to get it real quick there.
Right.
Like, oh, this is the Humboldt. This is great. You always knew.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, being grown and raised in San Jose, which is not that far from Humboldt.
Yeah.
You know, it's still Bay Area. We'd be like, wow. And if we can get that to a point where just open them fields, Michael, because you're right. Those Humboldts, and not only the Humboldts, the other parts of the world, even Mexico, who has these huge fields and great fields to grow. Peru, Puerto Rico, all these other areas that just
out there.
Fields and fields, and getting it down to that science of because everything you said, Michael, too, as far as to get to that medical grade like you're talking about, it has to be real consistent.
Right.
And especially if you're looking at the outside grow. Outside grow is hard to be real consistent, but like you're saying, Michael, anecdotally, these areas that you're describing in the Northern California anecdotally has been very consistent with the outside grow of what it's maintaining on all these aspects of looking at what it has from all the other metals and this and that and the THC level and this, you know, so... They've been very consistent.
Yeah, and you know, you bring up some great points, too, because I think I told a story to a couple of people before. Kandahar, Afghanistan, has the same climate as Northern California. And they were telling me, they're like, before, you know, the Soviets and the Taliban came in, that's where we grew our wine and our cannabis, and that was all out there. So it's kind of crazy how it all works around. But, you know, I think what's so exciting about Michael is, you know, speaking of international, some of the work that you've done with the UN, the World Health Organization, and having cannabis removed from the 1961 convention. I mean, I just want to hear more about that. And, you know, how did you even kind of come up with the idea, like, well, hey, I think we can do this at the UN and take this down? I mean, it's just an incredible feat that you accomplished.
Well, I'll tell you, the easy way to describe my strategy is that I came up with a strategy that involved more than one lifetime and then just sought to work on it. And then found myself finishing one lifetime before I reached retirement, because I'm still kind of kicking. I'm not ready to retire yet. and it's finished.
Right.
Yeah.
But we went into the UN in 1998. I went in, certainly presenting the information and facts and everything like that. But I went in with the understanding and the thought that we would get these badges. You know, because you can't even go into the UN to participate to find out what's going on so you can have a voice and even be active until you're in. And you can't get in without a badge. It's a total conundrum, one of those classic catch-22s that you need to get past. It's pretty much one in every great endeavor, I think. At least one great catch-22 you have to get past. And this was that one. And I thought, well, that's what I'll do. I'll get past that for the cannabis movement. I'll help the cannabis movement get badges, and someday, long after I'm gone, the cannabis movement, with these badges and with the recognition of how it works, because they've been inside for a while, will apply what's going on outside, and we will change the treaty and all that will happen. But long after I'm gone. And I finished that badge work, if you will, around 2008. And 2009 was given a gift by our classic opposition, Japan and Azerbaijan, ironically enough, joined together into a resolution. It was a seed resolution that opened up the can of worms that I knew I could take advantage of. And eventually it led to a World Health Organization review. And that review eventually led to recommendations. And those recommendations led us to some politicking and work lobbying and whatnot at the world level to actually get enough countries to sign on to this thing to pass it through the United Nations. Unlike day-to-day stuff on cannabis at the treaty level that requires this like ridiculous, unattainable consensus to move forward, finding a new consensus is like impossible right now. But the World Health Organization recommendations only required a simple vote of the countries present in the commission that's dealing with the drugs, the drug commission in Vienna, Austria. Hey, we could do that. And we did. We made it by one vote. Not exactly, you know, a huge margin of error there, but
so he needs one.
You know, they don't get the margin of error signs.
One on only. There we go.
On the touchdown, right?
Yeah.
That's all that matters once you cross the line. And that is a big one right there.
Oh, it was huge. I mean, literally, too, if you look at how the countries voted, it was a lot like NATO and like the Warsaw Pact. It was kind of like all the Western countries were for it. The Eastern countries were against it. Ironically, Afghanistan was against it. But yeah, like when he came in and told us, guys, we got it by one vote, that was massive, because it has such big implications on what we're doing here in America, and potentially people just aren't doing what they should be doing, and that would be a great topic to get into shortly.
Yeah, and we'll get back into this. Cannabis Talk 101, we're sitting here with Michael, and of course, that's my guy right here next to us, HVGC, Brian Buckley.
Boom.
Blue, Joe Grande, Cannabis Talk 101, the world's number one source for everything cannabis. We'll be right back after this.
We'll be right back with Cannabis Talk 101.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Get in zone, AutoZone.
Welcome to AutoZone. What are you working on today? Ah, thinking about gas mileage. You know, changing your oil with a full synthetic oil like Castrol Edge can help your engine get more miles. Right now, you can get 5 quarts with an STP Extended Life Oil Filter for only $36.99. Get started on your next job today with the parts you need when you need them at AutoZone or AutoZone.com.
Get in zone, AutoZone.
Restrictions apply.
Welcome back to Cannabis Talk 101.
Together we can, folks, and that's the best way to do it, together. At Canna Devices, hashtag together we can. That's at CannaDevices. And of course, when I say together we can, I mean together we can, all of us here, even together as our staff, because if it wasn't for Jessica from Nuggle, none of us would be here, bottom line. So thank you, Jessica, for doing everything that you do as you're sitting here in the building. I just want to make her blush. But really, though, thank you to her and Jan, Erica, Daniel, Cal, Christian A, Christian S, Danny, P-Funk, Connor, Kimberly, Selena, Sager, Brianna, Cash, Cam, Solar, Nadia, Allie, my brother Pitt, Chris Franchino, Jennifer, and Elvis. Thank you guys all so much for everything that you do. As we're sitting here with the Brian from HVGC and U.S. Air Force veteran, Michael Allen Krotz. Now, as you mentioned that before we went to break, it's kind of an interesting scenario.
Yeah, it's
that
very
you say that. Elaborate on that. I want to get your thoughts and Michael's thoughts on this as well, because you guys, as the vets, dealing with that, looking at that, present that scenario again, please.
Yeah. So at this point, Michael, back in December of 2020. Has cannabis removed from the 1961 treaty? And there's definitely action items that happen at this point. For example, I think it was like the general secretary will send letters out to all world leaders saying we no longer look at cannabis as internationally illegal. But Michael, how did the United States respond, or lack thereof, after you had this massive accomplishment?
I feel like it's still bullshit.
Well, hey, you know, before I answer that question directly, I feel like I should give you just a little bit of history, because the United States voted yes on the recommendations. And it, you know, we only won by one vote, but the United States vote was a very important vote for us. All the votes were very important votes for us. So, but it's not just that bit of history. I want to rewind a little bit before then. And the United States actually played a really key role in these discussions that happened in Vienna, Austria. The process for cannabis was totally different than anything that's ever happened before. It set a new precedent for how to deal with discussions at the United Nations with the World Health Organization, who is a part of a separate entity. I mean, people look at the WHO, the World Health Organization, as sort of part of the UN. They are part of the UN system generally, but they have a relationship with the UN as far as this drugs control program goes. And they weren't directly in charge of anything. They were invited as a guest anytime they came to Vienna and presented on cannabis. So there was two major world cannabis summits. The only topic was cannabis. The World Health Organization came and was grilled by countries and all these questions and stuff. And the United States, with two people, one fantastic scholar from Virginia University of Georgetown, a professor who's just like one of the most knowledgeable people on cannabis and treaty and United States Constitution and law of anyone in the entire world, as far as I can tell. And she was there answering questions, giving presentations in Vienna in official capacity. And there was a guy in our State Department who was assigned to cannabis for over a year. I know because I interacted with him for over a year in that capacity. That was his sole job, was to work on cannabis and cannabis policy and cannabis history within the United States law, within the treaty law, and within this process of the recommendations, mountain of evidence that the World Health Organization was going through. It was a full-time job, especially for one person. We were doing it with a team of cannabis activists that spanned the world.
Yep.
But I think it's important for you to look at the United States and really realize how much we were involved in all this, and especially calling the fact that they haven't done anything about it. They haven't complied with the change in the treaty. Now, be clear, the treaty has no hold over us in the United States.
Right.
It's our U.S. federal law that has a hold over us in the United States. And our U.S. federal law says, hey, when the treaty changes, you need to do this and you need to do that. Well, we haven't done it yet. And it's almost like we've given these green magic slippers to the attorney general. All he has to do is click them together three times and medical cannabis is legal in the United States.
I mean,
based on a change in treaty.
Exactly.
That quick.
And he won't pick up the damn shoes.
And not only that, why does it feel like it's not the case? Like, why does it feel like as you say that, and I hear both you, Michael, and Amanda, especially you, you just gave the description of how you did it. It makes all the common sense in the world of what you did. But it doesn't feel like that's even fucking possible of what he's saying. Like, that's legitimate. It doesn't feel like what you're saying is legitimate across the world.
Let me,
like, that's what's crazy.
Yeah, let me answer that for a second.
Please do.
I want to answer that for a second because that's a really interesting point from a U.S. perspective, because almost immediately, actually, before the treaty change occurred, the change in process and the change in position of the World Health Organization, which again is its own thing, when the World Health Organization said that cannabis was a dangerous drug that needed to be used with careful consideration and certainly be careful if you wanted to try to use it as a medicine, that was their position in 1950. They changed it to their new position, which is cannabis is absolutely a medicine. It's supported by science and in some cases provides relief that no other medication will provide and does so safely and within the tolerable limits of safety of other drugs. That's the new position of the WHO. Based on that, the EU changed its position. France changed its position. Germany changed its position. Changed the law of Luxembourg, changed the law of Chile,
Germany's
law started in order to do the change. And now with the change in treaty, there's just an unbelievable flow of change in policy at the national level throughout the world. The thing that people in the United States need to realize, though, is we are looking at things from a perspective of adult regulated access markets that are tuned to equity and sharing of resources responsibly and all this stuff that isn't even in the lingo of the people that are working on this internationally. They're at their Prop 215 moment right now. They're just starting medical marijuana basically at the world level and implementing that. And we kind of need to meet them where they are. The Canada, Uruguay, a couple of others, because of the unique circumstances, sort of has a toe in each water. But the world generally is implementing medical cannabis right now. And the United States, having not even made medical cannabis a reality at the national level, is really, I think, being held back by Congress, by the fact that Congress wants to go further and do this adult regulated markets with equal sharing and everything else. So it's very complicated. But it's
and not only complicated, as you say that, I get even more confused when you throw Israel in the mix of doing so much to the benefit. And when you say all that and look at us not doing something or this and that, it's like, well, they're doing so much. Can't we just follow suit?
Right. Right.
Like, can't we just follow that direction? Isn't that direction the one that we're all trying to go into?
That's just too much common sense.
Isn't that exactly the words right there? Doesn't this sound like common sense? What isn't Israel really leading the pack in the direction that we want to go?
Right.
So as I hear all that and hear everything you're saying, I'm like, can't we, Michael, get people to see this and get the globe to see this and then start getting these people that recognize it globally and say globally we can do that? Can we globally come up with a fucking solution that's going to globally help more people with all these medical global conditions? Because guess what? PTSD is global.
Yes, it is.
It's not the only veterans here, let alone veterans. epilepsy,
yeah.
cancer, seizure, all these pain, ankle yeah. pain that I'm in. Let's call it everything.
Yep.
They're all universal. The pains and problems that we're using cannabis here to solve, it seems like just logic, right?
Oh, amazingly. And that's like, you know, Michael, to your point, you feel, you know, Congress is kind of holding us back, but what, why? Like, what is the essence? Like, is it money? Is it the pharmaceutical company? I mean, where
they get
is,
to be the guy when we say it can go? Like, what is the,
yeah,
yeah
like,
what is it?
What is, like, the button we need to hit for them?
It's one of these status quo. The status quo can be looked at as sort of the surface tension of water. And the surface tension of water is interesting when you're skipping a stone. It's less interesting when you're falling off a bridge, right? It's more like concrete. These things are relative. Yeah. And this is a very, very big thing that we're trying to move very, very fast. It's acting more like concrete. And the weird thing about it is the passing of the buck stuff. You know, what I'm basically saying when I said what I said a minute ago is that the executive branch can do a lot more.
Right.
Obviously, the attorney general can do a lot more. The president could do so much more. And they're basically holding back because the Congress wants to do more. And Congress is basically holding back because the executive branch wants to do more on other things. And it's always cannabis stepping back and taking a back seat and being the gentleman and letting the lady move forward of, you know, health and responsible environmental right. and nuclear policy and stuff. Yeah, we've done that for 50 years. After a while, the gentleman is like doing it, but gritting his teeth in anger. And that's where we're at as a cannabis movement these days. And essentially watching and waiting for what's going to happen next.
Yeah.
No,
it's really interesting. And so, Joe, I work on the Veterans Action Council with Michael. And after he did all this great work and we were thinking, okay, here we go, like 2020, things are going to start changing. We got this thing internationally. It's not illegal anymore. And we actually crafted up a letter to the attorney general essentially saying, why don't you do your job?
And what'd they say back?
Nothing.
Mind your business and slow your fucking roll, kids.
Pretty much. I mean, it was crickets. You know?
I mean, that's the best and worst part about this. Like, I agree with you, but you guys are going to the government that's going to say, okay. Okay. You know what I mean? Like, I want to do the same thing. I want to send them a letter, too.
Yep.
They're going to say, sit down, fat boy.
Yeah, they're like, all right, Sparky.
Yeah.
But this is the thing.
It's crazy.
It's not the government that really amazes me on that one. It's the response that we got or the non-response that we got from media. And these are even some folks that we work with in media that I don't know. I've never really gotten it clear yet. And I haven't dropped the ball on this one yet. This is still an unanswered question. And for me, unanswered questions burn in my mind. They get answered. I will find out what's going on. I'll get an editor, a proper editor on the phone and find out what it is about this story that has made them not want to run with it. Not want to ask any questions, not want to follow up at all on the press releases, nothing.
Yep.
It's just maybe too complicated.
I don't know.
Exactly. But here, let me go back to a previous
thing
while it's still stuck in my mind because I want to answer this. You were asking sort of how can we move this forward internationally? What can we do? What kind of mechanisms there are? And you're going to be blown away by this because this, if I didn't experience this firsthand, if I didn't know how the system worked from the inside, I wouldn't even believe this was true. But with the entire world, and the entire world's needs, essentially, and there's 186 countries or something like that that are part of this drug control treaty system at the United Nations, and a little bit more that are involved with the World Health Organization on drug policy. And within that structure, there's, believe it or not, a 13-member board. It's called the International Narcotics Control Board.
Okay.
And their function is to ensure medical access in partnership with the World Health Organization. So they're the key focal point of the World Health Organization and the United Nations on access to medicine. Once you declare cannabis a medicine, right, it's in their purview.
Totally.
These 13 people helping to make sure that the billions upon billions of people on Earth have access to these important medicines, which many of them the World Health Organization has deemed essential. And, you know, we've heard that before.
Yeah.
Cannabis was deemed essential
That's
in the
true.
United States. And
I mean, during it all, exactly.
Yep.
Right? So, you know, we are talking about an essential and important medicine that has all of a sudden been dropped in their laps. And I know, okay, you're going to say the International Narcotics Control Board has been there since 61 or whatever, and they haven't done a damn thing. Well, it's never been declared a medicine before. I got the International Narcotics Control Board president on the record just a few years back with the final really clear answer to a question that was another one of these answers I had to get, right? Why wasn't the, you know, world body ensuring access to cannabis? Their job was to ensure access to medicine. When I finally got a president of the INCB, as it's called, to answer that straightforwardly, he said, because the World Health Organization hadn't declared it a medicine yet. And like 3 years later, boom, we got the World Health Organization to declare it a medicine. Now it's been enshrined in law. Again, we're back to that Prop 215 moment, but think about the grandness of this one. This is like world moment, you know?
Yep. It really is.
Massive.
And it really is medicine. I mean, that's the thing. That it's no more baffling. It's no more just smoke weed. It's like, dude, how many countries now? We're hurting 148, for God's sakes.
Right.
People are listening to this. They're all intrigued on what cannabis is doing.
Yeah.
No matter, in 148, we're in countries that it's not legal. How they find us, they're finding it. They're finding it. They want the medicine. They want to hear about the medicine. They want to hear about what this medicine is doing to people.
Yeah.
Like, people in the world are searching for this, and it's so great that you guys have done something like this, Michael. I appreciate your time so much. You know, something we like to do with our guests, just because I'm curious, we like to do the high five with you. So I'm going to ask you five questions, Michael, before we let you jump, and just fun, simple ones that we like to do with all the guests that come on the show. And the simple one with U.S. Air Force veteran Michael Krawitz. How old were you the first time you smoked cannabis, and where did you get it from?
Oh, man, I don't know. let's say an unknown source and in junior high school.
Nice.
What grade? Sixth, seventh, eighth?
Junior high school, it goes from, what, seventh to ninth?
Yeah.
Depending on where you're at, I guess. Mine was sixth to eight, but okay. So the good young age, perfect. What is your favorite way to use cannabis?
I guess I'm an old fogey. I think these things are generational, but I still like to smoke cannabis. Just a little bit of really fine extract on top of a proper bowl or in a proper joint can be just about perfect. But vaporizers are nice. These vape pens are nice. You know, you got to admit, like you said, they're a huge advantage for patients.
I never knew of it. I was always a joint smoker or a bowl smoker as well, or bong smoker or whatever. Uh-huh. So therefore, now with this pin, it's just right there. Boom, boom, boom. It's just, to me, the quickest,
very
best
convenient.
Thing. Exactly. Yep. Craziest place you ever used or smoked cannabis?
I guess inside the United Nations.
Ooh, that's big right there. Look at U.S. Air Force veteran. Go ahead, show off. Craziest places. Definitely the U.S. nation is big one right there. That might be very, that's strong. What is your go-to munchies when you get high?
Listen. I gotta stall you on that and go back for a quick story. Right?
Please, so, actually.
You know, it wasn't that many years ago that they actually had a smoking area up, you know, in the grassy area and right on the porch outside the United Nations in Vienna, Austria. And then, of course, they went healthy and the whole system went healthy. And then they drove you underground to what looks like it's in a movie. I swear to you, like an old Soviet-looking smoking station in the parking garage somewhere that you're allowed to smoke these days. But we actually used to sit in sort of a knitting circle in the grass, pass around a joint just out of the sight of the camera inside the United Nations during the meetings. And that was a pretty blessed little thing that we got to do for a moment. And oh wait, and one more, during the big drug summit in 2016, we smoked just outside of the camera's view inside New York at the United Nations amongst the rubble of the Berlin Wall that they had set up there ready to move and create the garden that they've got now. They've got a little garden area. You got to get in with a pass and a visitor's guide to show it to you. But there's big chunks of the Berlin Wall. And they, of course, they don't let you smoke weed next to them now.
Of course not.
No.
And now question number four. That was so great, Michael. Yeah. What is your go-to munchies after you got high in the past? Or is there still a good one now that you like?
You know, I've always loved pretzels. I think that's like the perfect munchies. I don't know.
I love when they put peanut butter in them now, too. Nice. So it makes it feel like I'm getting some protein in those. I'm like, peanut butter and some salty and some pretzels. It's a protein snack now.
I got to say, I feel a bit embattled though, because if you go to a modern convenience store, there's this wall of munchies, and then if you're lucky, you can find a bag of pretzel in the myriad somewhere.
Exactly, and God forbid. Yes. Question number five with a high five with U.S. Air Force veteran Michael Allen Krawitz. If you could smoke cannabis with anyone, dead or alive, who would it be and why?
I guess I'd have to go with Louis, one of our first cannabis activists in our cannabis activist pool, or what we call our cannabis movement broadly. Louis Sachmo Armstrong was a great lover of cannabis. And if he handed you a candy bar to munch on, it tasted really good, but beware, it was a laxative bar. He was very strong proponent of keeping your body clear and smoking lots of weed.
That's always a good thing.
I never knew that.
Oh, funny stuff. Michael, is there anything that we forgot or you want to mention before we let you go? And once again, thank you for everything that you've done on the global standpoint, let alone the local standpoint, but your movement and your service as far as being a U.S. Air Force man. Thank you for that and continue to do things. But anything else that you want to mention before we let you go, Michael?
Well, thanks, man. And thanks for, you know, your attention, all the stuff. I really appreciate Brian's efforts and, you know, us joining together in this sort of fraternity of veterans. This Veterans Action Council has been really a great experience for me, and I think for everybody.
Sure is.
That I really appreciate. For real. Yeah, I just want to say, you know, that the old saying that they have for the internationals, but what is it? Think globally, but act locally. And it could never be more true. I mean, it's always been true, and it could never be more true. The stuff that you do at the very local level, when you talk to a council member, when you write a letter to the editor, when you talk to your elected representatives, when you talk to your family members, your neighbors and friends, and do these things, they don't just ripple out. They are the body of what, you know, we attach to and do our work from.
You're winning hearts and minds, my friend.
You are, brother. Keep up the Lord's work. We greatly appreciate you. Thank you so much for coming on the show. If there's anything we could ever do, you got his number. You got our number. You're a brother of Brian's. You're a brother of ours. Thank you so much, Michael. It's Cannabis Talk 101. Remember this. If no one else loves you, we do. Bam.
Thank you for listening to Cannabis Talk 101 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get in zone, AutoZone.
Welcome to AutoZone. What are you working on today? Thinking about gas mileage. You know, changing your oil with a full synthetic oil like Castrol Edge can help your engine get more miles. Right now, you can get 5 quarts with an STP Extended Life Oil Filter for only $36.99. Get started on your next job today with the parts you need when you need them at AutoZone or AutoZone.com.
Get in zone, AutoZone.
Restrictions apply.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.